Jesus loves him, but the rest of us think he's a putz. It's the Drew Marshall Show.
I wish I knew the words to this song.
Go team, you're the best. We love Tennessee.
Very well done. Very well done. Folks, it's I just wanted to start that, you know, with this interview with that song, because this guy, boy, he is a serious Tennessee fan. But he's also a fan of Dolphins. He's a fan of Elvis. He's kind of a big deal. But the one thing you need to know about David Keith is that Tennessee football is too important to enjoy. Ladies and gentlemen, live on the Drew Marshall Show, the one and only David Keith. How you doing, man?
I'm good. Where did you get that recording? That's our whole fight song from like 30 years ago.
That's how old I am.
That's called Down the Field, I think. No, that's not Down the Field. But Down the Field's a different one. We use Rocky Top now. That's what drives everybody crazy.
Yeah.
Opponent crazy is Rocky Top. But I'm doing good, man. You doing good? Where exactly in Canada are you?
Well, a little place called Toronto.
Oh, okay. I love Toronto. Been there lots of times.
Yeah, what did you film here?
I don't remember the names of them.
Really? Come on, man. Come on.
The last thing I did there was an episode of Nikita.
Wow.
So, and it was during the Toronto Film Festival, so the town was hopping.
Well, you know, we were going to play the theme from Flipper because you love dolphins so much.
Not really. Where did you get that?
Well,
you
said one time in an interview that you like living or filming on location if location's nice and warm and stuff. And you did this one deal where you got to swim with dolphins.
That was amazing. That was a movie about dolphins.
Yeah.
We did open ocean swims with dolphins. Yeah. And you know, I'd never been around them before. I mean, I've always thought they were cool, but that's not in my like top 20.
No, you'd rather hooning around in a big cigarette boat, right?
I like the Allman Brothers better than I like dolphins.
Okay, I like that. You know, Little Birdie told me that you went to your first Tennessee football game when you were like 6 or 7 years old, and you were working the sidelines as an equipment manager by the time you hit 13. Your father hadn't missed a game in 65 years. Your grandfathers have been going since the turn of the century, and season tickets have been in your family for four generations. So would it be fair to say that you are a fan of the Big Orange?
Yeah, it's like every Saturday is like having a fairly close relative in critical surgery. So it's not like fun. It's everything. I said on the Mark and Brian show one time that what Tennessee did on a football field was a measure of who we are in Knoxville as men.
Whoa.
And so we got killed one year, like a couple years later than that, and they called me and said, "So, are you feeling sort of emasculated?" And indeed I was.
Nice. Nice to have good friends like that. Well, you were you not buddies with Bill Bates from Cowboys?
Yes. We I actually talked to Bill when he was his senior year, and it was right after a loss, and we were at some club in Atlanta, and I was saying, "Bill, you need to walk on at the Cowboys because I don't think you're going to get drafted." He said, "Oh, I'm going to get drafted." I said, "Bill, you've played every position there is. They don't know what to make of you. Just walk on at the Cowboys. They're going to love you." And evidently he didn't get drafted, and then he walked on at the Cowboys, and the story is that he tore Tony Dorsett's helmet off on a tackle.
Oh, beautiful.
And they said, "Okay, we want you."
Beautiful. So,
then I started going down there, and I carried the video equipment for KXAS out of Fort Worth on the sidelines. I went to all the games all over the country, wherever they were. I'd fly to I'd fly to Tennessee's game, and then I'd leave that night or early the next morning to wherever Dallas played. And in the end, in 1989, I carried Tom Landry's headset. I stood next to Tom Landry throughout the entire game. It was incredible.
It's ridiculous. Ridiculous. The only person I know that goes to, you know, just as many home games as you is Frank Gifford. Frank goes to every Giants game. He is just a diehard Giants fan.
Well, and player as well.
And yeah, of course. I think that might have earned him a spot in some hall somewhere. That's for sure.
They won't run him off the sidelines. They ended up taking my sidelines pass away. I don't know, 8 years ago. But it's great because I sit in the seats with my family, and it's I enjoyed not standing up the whole game.
Oh, yeah. Heck, yeah. David, is your brother still doing the play-by-play for the Titans?
That's my third cousin.
Oh, third cousin.
His grandfather was raised by my grandfather. They were 16 years apart, and they'd lost their parents shortly after he was born. And then Mike is the voice of the Titans, but he's my third cousin.
And did you play ball yourself much, or...?
I did as a kid. I played baseball through high school, but I got my knees hurt in football, and I was never going to be big enough for the line or fast enough for the backfield, so I quit that in the eighth grade. And basketball was, I was never very good at basketball.
No.
But, baseball was the sport that I lasted the longest with.
Is there something out there that says you have a nickname? And I never know if I can trust this kind of information when I do the research, but
it's not true.
That's not true, okay.
Deke is Derek Jeter's nickname.
Yeah.
It's not mine. I don't know who. See, that Wilson, that website was built by a Canadian woman who was a big fan of mine. She put all the information on it, and, you know, I looked it up, and there were three or four movies I hadn't been in. But the Deke thing, man, nobody's ever called me that.
So Canadian women aren't the sharpest. Okay, I'm hearing that. That's fine.
But I can walk. That's what I wanted to say. But I can walk up to the backstop at a Yankee game while Derek's warming up and go Deke, and he turns around and goes, "Hey, Dave."
Oh, come on.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Excuse me while I pick up that name. Oh. So are you now? Did you ever run any cattle? Do you have a piece of property with some cattle on it, or no?
I have sold the farm, and before that, I sold the cattle. I had about 60 head, and just, you know, mutts, just, you know, sold for weight.
Yep.
And the price for old, my cows were so old, it was getting a little rough on them, childbearing. They were beyond their childbearing years, and so I sold them about 3 years ago. Sold the farm this past year.
Is that kind of a kick in the guts? Is that kind of like...
No, I bought, that was a great investment, and it ended up paying off, and I had a great time down there. I never lived on it.
All right.
I would go down and back when I was single, I had a girl in town. I'd jump in the Jeep and drive all over the property. Gorgeous property. Quarter mile of the Teleco River on the property, and just really beautiful. And I'd run down there and chase the cows around with the Jeep and ride horse. A couple of friends boarded horses down there on my farm, and I was allowed to ride them anytime I wanted, so that was fun. But it was a good investment, and it really paid off.
The land I fell in love with instantly was out by Leaper's Fork. It was right by the Judds. They have this beautiful piece of property out there. And, man, you've been up near Leaper's Fork, have you?
Well, I've been out and visited the Judd's office. Their father, I guess ex-father, who still runs the company.
Yeah.
Not ex-father, but ex-husband. But I went up and visited the office a couple times, but I've never been to that specific fork that you're talking about.
It's just that neck of the woods is beautiful. So, okay, so apparently you're at stage three of your life, and stage three of your life is all about rescuing kids from perverts within their own family sometimes. True?
Most of the time. Over 95% of the time it's within their own families, or within their own circle of trust.
Yeah.
And most of that is within their own families. Yeah, incest is more prevalent, and stranger danger that people, you know, that Nancy Grace makes a living talking about is extremely rare. Extremely rare.
So are you the campaign chairman still?
Not in, your children, children are not in danger from strangers. It's minuscule. The odds are just are way too long. But they are in danger from the people they trust. They're Sunday school teachers. They're coaches. They're babysitters. You know, mom's boyfriend. The people that, you know, you never think is that kind of animal is. You know, that's why they got those jobs.
Recidivism in this whole thing, you think? I mean, I've heard many times that people who fool around with kids, that ain't never going to change. True story?
True story. All pedophiles and all child predators were victims of child predators. It's like vampires. And that doesn't mean that all victims or survivors of child molestation will turn out to be predators. A lot of them don't.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I have lots of good friends who were, in fact, molested when they were very young and have been very candid about it, but they got help, and they did not turn into that themselves. But yeah, there ain't no fixing them.
Are you still the campaign chairman for National Association to Protect Children?
Yes. My title is tweaked just a little bit as senior campaign strategist because – most of what I do is raise money, but for the organization. But I am traveling to Seattle next week. We have a bill called the Leashes Law, and it's named after Elisa Kozakiewicz, who is a survivor, and she's a spokesperson for us. And it provides a state supplementary funding stream for the federally funded ICACs. Now, ICACs, Internet Crimes Against Children Task Forces, are they're local law enforcement, but they got their training and a little bit of funding from the Justice Department in Washington, but it's not nearly enough. It's like $200,000 a year. It's like nothing, drop in the bucket. So we're trying to get them $2 million a year in addition from state funds, and we've run into a little bottleneck in Seattle, so I'm going out there to do a press conference on Wednesday. So I'm still doing some lobbying, too, but just about everything we start up doing, I'm involved in the discussions and the choices and the direction we go. Our main... our centerpiece, the jewel, the main jewel of what we're doing is called the Hero Corps, Human Exploitation Rescue Operative Heroes. We're training wounded vets to be child rescue cops and then getting them investigation jobs with Homeland Security.
That is fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a guy that's a double amputee that went on a sting in New York and rounded up 87 collectors of child pornography. Over half of them had child victims, rescued all those kids, and it's a double amputee with a service dog. I mean, it really is super.
Am I wrong to think, my first thought, right, and tell me if I'm a jerk for thinking this, but my first thought is, I don't know, the amputees are going to be less suspect, they're not going to be easily sort of found out, they're not going to suspect that they're cops, I don't know, because they're amputees?
No, it's not, and they're not the first guy to knock on the door. They have SWAT people for that. All the stealth is done online because trading child pornography is visible to law enforcement software. So they know where the computers are, and they just get an address from the phone company, from the carrier, and go knock on the door and say, we'd like to look at your computer. And if they say no, they come back with a search warrant. There's not any stealth involved. It's just that they get to do it. These guys were ex-special forces. They're the greatest hunters of men on the planet, and now they're hunting the worst scumbags on the planet. And, it's just this, and they rescue kids, so it's a win-win-win situation.
Man.
You can go to www.protect.org, or forget the W's, just go to protect.org /hero, and there's a 7-minute video that I narrate and I'm in. It explains the whole thing.
Very cool.
So I urge your listeners to go check that out.
Yeah, protect.org. Hey, listen, when you were working on, what was that movie called? Officer and Gentleman. Were you the one to blame for David Caruso's now signature move with those stupid sunglasses? Did you teach him that move?
No, but we were best friends during that movie. We hung out all the time. We wrote songs. Deborah Winger broke his heart, and he wrote songs to Deborah Winger, and I put them to music, and after the movie, we recorded them. Yep. And I went and did a couple of CSI Miamis and asked him if he still had the tapes. He did. Oh. But he's a different person now. But we were good buddies. And
Hold on. What do you mean he's a different person now? What does that mean?
I don't know. I don't want to talk bad about anybody. He seems to be a different person to me now.
He's Hollywood. Okay, got it. Okay, folks, you may not know this, but I want to tell you something about David Keith, and this is truth. With a capital T. The scene in Officer and Gentleman where David Keith proposes to his girlfriend and she rejects him and then he swallows the ring. Very few people know this, but he actually swallowed the ring. And because they had to shoot that scene multiple times, they actually had this opaque-like string attached to the string, and every time he swallowed it, he just yanked it back up. True story?
I cannot believe you told that. That's what I tell people that are gullible enough to believe it. I hit it under my tongue. But I tell people that story all the time, and that you just see their faces, Where did you get that?
I'm just a creeper, that's all.
Wait, you've no kidding. Nightcrawler.
When you play guitar, right?
Yeah.
So when you're sitting on that ginormous green couch in your home playing your guitar, the one with the black face and the tan sunburst around the bridge and saddle area, what kind of guitar is that, by the way?
That's a little Gibson 1500. It's a small traveling acoustic guitar, and I just got a new one. I got a Bluebird. It's a company that makes Martin copies out of China, but they're really good copies, like $4,000. And I got the D45 with all the abalone inlay, and it sounds like $1,000,000. I don't even open any of my other guitar cases anymore.
It's nice. I have a Jumbo Guild with that same kind of style.
Oh, you do? Yeah. That's a guitar that's on my bucket list. I want to get a Jumbo Guild.
Hey, you know, everything's for sale for the right price, man. Everything's for sale for the right price. What I was wondering is, when you're sitting on that ginormous green couch playing your guitar, do you kind of hammer out some Rolling Stones tunes? Because did you not kind of chill with them when you were filming Lords of Discipline in London?
Yep, I did. Hung out with them there, and then went back a year later, and Bill Wyman and I, when I was Lords of Discipline is when I met him briefly, and then I went back over to do If Tomorrow Comes, and got to be buddies with Bill Wyman, and we'd go to dinner with him and Astrid, his then wife, and we actually ended up making a little rockabilly record with some of the members of Dave Edmunds' band, Rockpile, and Bill at Jimmy Page's recording studio outside of London. It was an old stone mill, like a grist mill, that they turned into a studio.
Nice.
And made some music with them, and I went to see the Stones in Leeds with Bill Wyman, you know, in his car, and sung with the backup singers a couple of times like toward the end of the stuff. Yeah, haven't talked to any of them in a long time, but that was back in the day.
Now, you just threw out If Tomorrow Comes.
Mm-hmm. And that was the second time I was in London.
Correct. Well, now, what's If Tomorrow? I'm just trying to think.
I'm sorry. That's the third time I was in London. I was doing Gulag. That's when I hung out with Bill Wyman and got to meet them.
Okay. I don't care how many times you've been to London. I'm trying to get a story out of this If Tomorrow Comes thing. Was that a Sidney Sheldon deal?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Madeline Smith.
Yep.
She is a very good friend of mine.
She is such a great person.
Seriously. So she's co-hosted my show a few times, and she has the most seductive vocal cords in the world. She should voice over everything.
Well, I told her at the time, I said, honey, you are the Marion kind.
Yeah.
Not, in other words, she's not just beautiful physically, she's beautiful all the way.
Yeah.
Her soul. Awesome.
She ended up marrying a guy from Toronto who played for the Leafs, Mark Osborne, and both of them are good friends and might be listening right now. Anything you want to say to Madeline? Easy.
You were the great one that got away.
Nice. Well done. Ladies and gentlemen, David Keith, the smooth meister on the Drew Marshall Show. Okay, so kids later in life. Like, not as late as Letterman or who else? Just Stevie Wonder just birthed out some twins. But later in life, how come?
I made it a point to never date the marrying kind of women. I dated women for one reason and one reason only.
Yep.
And spent lots of my life with, you know, the wrong kind of women. And then at 42, I said, you know, I better settle down and get started. And I met my now wife. I got married at 45. I met her when I was 42. And I got married at 45 and had my first child at 47 and my second child at 57. So I have a 3-year-old.
Wow. Do you want to live in Knoxville. You want to grow up the kids in Knoxville. You want your kids to know the smell of Knoxville at night, right?
There's a great country song that Keith Whitley recorded. The name of it's escaping me. I'll think of it in a minute.
Barely.
Oh, that's where I want to take our love.
Okay.
And settle down. It talks about his kids, so they'll know just what country means before they go off to town. And I wanted them to know what regular. I don't live in the country. I live in the suburbs, but I'm, you know, there's woods everywhere, and it's remote. It's seemingly more remote than it is, but yeah, they're living a normal life. We're in the minority here because there's, you know, hardly any other Democrats other than us, but it was great. My daughter came home from grammar school and she said, "Daddy, I voted for Obama." And I said, "Did anybody else?" She said, "No."
Oh, man. Now, are you still spending your wedding anniversary with Nancy at the Bluegrass Steaks?
You know, we did that a couple of times up at Keeneland, but yeah. we weren't able to do it last year. I went, and she couldn't go. She's a pretty successful realtor, so she can't always get away, you know, for a length of time. We take a nice vacation in late spring, early summer to Florida, and even that's tough on her to be away. She loses sales because she seems to sell about a house a week.
Come on. Really?
Oh, she's unbelievable. She's a star. At least that's what she leaves her house in a miniskirt and high heels, comes back with a wad of cash.
Yeah.
You know, gives me my vodka money. I don't ask any questions.
Oh, man, that was hilarious. Oh, well, you and Corbin Burnson, I think, did you not first meet on Major League 2, or did you know each other before then?
Oh, no. I was doing my very first big job. I did a play when I first moved to New York, and then that was over and didn't go to Broadway like it was supposed to. And I thought, well, that was it. Flash in the pan, career's over. And I got a sitcom that was not funny. But we started rehearsing the pilot in Los Angeles, my first trip to L.A., and there was an incredibly beautiful, sexy blonde in it named Heather Thomas. And Heather and I took to each other immediately and started hanging out after work. And she said, "My boyfriend's getting kind of jealous. Do you mind if I invite him over?" I said, "No." So Corbin comes over. He doesn't like me because she's, like, been late coming home for a few days in a row. But immediately we started talking UCLA football and college football, and he's just the greatest guy in the world. And all of a sudden Heather was out. It was just like me. And then so I finally got they had an apartment in Marina Del Rey. I got an apartment two blocks away and brought my girlfriend out from New York. And the four of us did everything. We hiked in Yosemite. And then when my girlfriend and I broke up, I was the third wheel on lots of things with Heather and Corbin. And then they finally broke up, and Corbin and I moved to New York. And he wasn't even an actor yet. When I met him, he was a graduate student in theater. In the technical side of theater at UCLA. And a few years after we lived in New York, and just basically we went to New York and just tore it up. I mean, I couldn't even be, I wish I'd kept a journal.
No.
Sometimes I wish I did.
No.
Sometimes I'm glad I didn't.
Yeah, too incriminating, yep. Mm-hmm.
But, well, for other people, not for me. But Corbin finally, after he'd gotten his own apartment and had a girlfriend, he got a part in a soap opera. As an actor, you know, I didn't even know he was trying to be an actor. And we've been very, very close friends. He was at my wedding. And
well, we had Corbin on about a month ago. Of course, he directed the Christian, you know, the Christian Mingle movie. And, I had a great time chatting with him. I really, really like this guy, man. And and when we had Stephen Tobolowsky on a couple of weeks ago, and I said to Stephen, "What's a nice Jewish boy like you doing in a film like this?" Right. And so what about you, David? I mean, what's, you know, from the South, everyone from the South has a God story, you know, because you're forced to go to church. But is there much of a God thing going on, you know?
You know, we go to church almost every Sunday. I've been a Methodist all my life, and I belong to the church that my mother was a member of. I grew up in a church in a different end of town than I live in now, so I go to the church that my mom grew up in, First United Methodist Church of Knoxville. And I never had to be born again because it kind of stuck to begin with. You know, I've certainly drifted away as far as the rules go and come back. But God has never been out of my life, never. And I have had times when my faith was shaken, like losing my mom this December and the pain that she went through. I just sat there and thought, how... You know, I've gotten angry with God. Yep. He's probably gotten angry with me, but we've never broken up.
That's a great, you know, I often sort of parallel divorce with my relationship with God stuff because, you know, I've stomped away numerous times. I've slammed the door numerous times. I've tried to slap him upside the face numerous times. And I just struggle. I mean, that's what our show primarily is about is just being honest about doubts and
I do too. I'm a real proof guy.
Yeah.
And I'm not a real faith guy. Just in general.
Yeah, me too.
And
yeah.
And so so it's harder for me to hold on to my faith than other people. But I have some mentors. One particular mentor, a woman who lives not too far from here, and she is so solid in the walk and everything, and so solid in her faith that all I have to do is spend a half an hour with her, and it's, you know, better than any preacher you ever heard in your life. I mean, and she just talks to me, but she truly is an instrument of God, one of the hierarchy of the instruments of God on this planet. And her name is Farrell Winfrey, and she means the world to me. You know, she's not a member of my family, but she's just an incredible person. We met on the racism committee here in Knoxville.
The spiritual mentor in your life, the last name is Winfrey?
Yeah.
It's kind of ironic.
Why? Is your last name Winfrey?
No, but like one of the biggest spiritual mentors in the world to so many people is Oprah Winfrey. So I just thought,
yeah. Gosh, I didn't even make the connection.
Huh.
I didn't realize she was a spiritual mentor.
Well, she is, you know, I mean, you know, people are trying to put Oprah in their own boxes, and she's not, you know, she's not known to be flexible that way, so.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Oprah had a lot to do with the Hero Corps, not she personally, but the idea of the Hero Corps came from Oprah's attorney, who is now the attorney with her show, who's now on our board. Huh. And she was just musing out loud, and this one of the creators of the Wounded Warrior Project heard it, and the creator of the Wounded Warrior Project's twin brother, who was in the FBI, said, "You get somebody to train wounded Special Forces veterans, I want everyone you train." But the FBI turned out to not be so excited about it, so we went with Homeland Security. So now all the guys are going to be Homeland Security agents.
Wow.
Diverted from the subject there for a second.
No, that's cool. Whenever I get people on the show, quite oftentimes I will ask them this question, and I don't know, I wasn't going to ask you, but I thought with the kind of things you've done and where you've been and places, you know, people you hung out with, etc. There's a guy named Romeo Dallaire. He led the UN peacekeeping mission during the Rwandan genocide, and he could have stopped the thing, except the, you know, the UN, in all of their testicular fortitude, told him to stand down. He was just there as an observer. And he struggled with this long, long time. You know, Shake Hands with the Devil, that movie, that book, etc. It was about his life. You know, I asked him one time if he believed there was a God, and he said yes. And one of the reasons he believes there's a God is because he has shaken hands with the devil. And he was talking about his experience with the rebels. I think it was the Tutsis or Hutus. I always get them confused. But when he shook hands with the bad dude, a chill went through him. And so I ask people regularly, have you ever encountered evil? Whatever that seems or feels like, you know, where that shiver just went right up your spine and you knew it, right? You knew there was evil. Because my way of thinking, David, is if I can experience supernatural evil, that will help me better settle down into the fact that there is a supernatural. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and the closest I've ever got was I guess it was a little too pathetic to be that kind of... He was still evil. I shouldn't have any sympathy for him, but the guy Cooey that raped and buried,
yep,
Jessica Lunsford alive.
Yep.
I was at his trial and was a guest on Nancy Grace each day after the trial, and I sat in the trial and just looked at the back of his head, and it was a real tough time for me, because I realized that I was a member of Protect, and I was in this organization out of revenge, because I wanted to destroy everybody who would hurt a child.
Yeah.
And I spent 8 hours a day in that courtroom from behind him, thinking about how I could knife between the detectives and snap his little neck before they could stop me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very common feeling. Most of the people that I talk about that I raise money from, they're the guys that want to go hunting pedophiles right now. They reach for the deer rifle. I say, well, just give me the checkbook instead. But I had to wrestle with that motivation. I don't want to be motivated by hurting people.
No.
So I'm motivated by rescuing the kids now, and I made peace with that through a lot of praying, a lot of energy directed toward changing that feeling, and also the realization that all of those monsters were once little sweet little kids that were preyed on by the previous generation of monsters. But no, I've never shaken hands with anybody that I knew was pure evil. I stood in a cell looking at a guy who let his wife torture his daughter, but I've never come across that kind of successful, maniacal evil that guy did when he shook his hand. But I see evidence of it when I can tell you that 3 years ago the most popular piece of child pornography was a 27-minute video of an 18-month-old baby being sodomized on a diaper changing table. Those people exist. People like that. They get joy from that. They get sexual gratification, but it's more than sexual gratification. It's the destruction of innocence, like their innocence was destroyed. So that in itself is evil. And, you know, one of my closest friends, one of the founders of Protect Doubt, he's a doubter. He said, how could God ever let this go on?
Yeah.
And I said, he ain't. What do you think we are?
Great answer.
We're the ones, you know, I believe that God wants us to make our own choices. He wants to give us a direction. He wants to give us a plan. He wants to give us some laws even. But it's up to us whether we handle it or not, whether we handle our evil, whether we clean up this earth. And he's not going to do it for us. And I think that's what, you know, the National Association to Protect Children is. It's the one flaming sword. There's a lot of people, there's a lot of, you know, that the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and there's child advocacy centers all over the place, and they're all, you know, they make the rubber bracelets and they take care of the children after the fact, but there is nobody going after these son of a bitches but us.
Yeah.
Nobody.
Yeah. If you cannot say amen to that, you're dead. Frick. What a pleasure to talk to you. I just want to let you know that David Keith is who we've been chatting with, Golden Globe nominated actor. You know him from a million different things. I'm not going to go through the list. I want to let you know that his most recent project is Christian Mingle the Movie. You can go to that website, christianminglethemovie.com. I watched it. I watched it with pessimism, and I came away with a little tickle. It was well done. And
you loved it.
Yeah, it really was.
I love when she has to pray for the first time out loud with all of us around the table. That was hilarious.
That was fun. I was just talking to somebody yesterday in New York, and we were talking about how it was first time she was asked to pray publicly, and it was in front of a bunch of school kids at a Christian school, and she choked, and she didn't, and she was, you know, being all real and, you know, talking normal, and then she forgot how to close the deal, right? She's like, she forgot to say amen. She didn't know how to finish the prayer. So she goes, so okay, thanks, goodbye. I thought that was hilarious. Anyway, Christian Mingle, a movie, Stephen Tobolowsky, love him. Ned, is that you, Ned? What was that movie again? Groundhog Day. Groundhog Day. Is it Lacey? Do you say Chabert or Chabert? Chabert? How do you say Lacey's last name? Anyway, she's from Mean Girls Party 5. Jonathan Patrick Moore and so many others. John O'Hurley, you know him from Seinfeld and All My Children. Anyway, of course, the film was written and directed by Corbin Burnson, and you know him from L.A. Law, Major League, Beyond the Heavens, etc. It's now available.
The Evil Dentist.
Yes. Yes.
I know people that I tell, as I say, L.A. Law, you don't know L.A. Law, you don't do, and when, as soon as I say The Evil Dentist,
they go,
oh, yeah,
ding,
yeah,
ding. Right. What was your best memory of being on the set of Happy Days?
Oh, gosh, that was so terrible. I had this whole broken down, well, it wasn't broken down, but it seemed to break down. I had a Triumph TR3, and I couldn't get it started in the mornings, and I was late almost every day, and the great director, Jerry Paris, would not even speak to me after the second day of being late. So I just felt this pall over me the whole time, but it was when the greatest part of that was when we got in front of the live audience. That's what makes sitcoms the greatest medium for an actor on the planet.
Yeah.
You shoot in front of a live audience, and you rehearse. You rehearse for 3 days before the cameras come near you. So there's no there's no cameraman telling you not to go where your instincts tell you to go, because they're not lit for it. And so you're all lit. You've done all this organic rehearsing with the director like a play, and then you shoot it, and then unlike a play, you don't have to do it again for the next year. You get a whole new script next Monday. I mean, it's the best medium in the world.
Well, yeah, I think as you creep on this guy online, you would know everything he's been in, David Keith. David, when was the last time? This is the final question. When was the last time someone came up to you, some dopey blonde came up to you and went, OMG, it's you. Can I get your autograph? And what's it like being married to Goldie Hawn?
You know, I don't get Kurt Russell much anymore.
Really?
I used to get Patrick Swayze even after he died.
Oh, that's awkward.
But now I just get, I can't remember your name, but I know you're in all these movies, and they start naming the movies. But that happens daily.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm in public, and if I go to the supermarket or something, there at least four or five people will say, I enjoy your work. Or, you know, they don't bug me anymore. Like they, in the 80s and early 90s, it was.
Well, yeah, like that first time you came back from the UK when Officer and Gentleman finally hit, right? I mean, that when you came back, it was a gong show.
Yeah, I was away shooting Lords of Discipline and came back, and Officer and Gentleman had been out open a month.
Yeah.
And we were shooting in Charleston, shooting the final 2 weeks of Lords in Charleston, and I couldn't go anywhere. I went to a nightclub, and one of the first nights there, and somehow they found out I was there. They stopped the music and turned on the lights and announced that I was there, and I had to sign like 300 wet napkins and kiss drunk girls. And one guy, a very surly guy, came up to me and said, hey, my girlfriend's in love with you. Give her a kiss. Oh, man, that's cool. Why? She's not good enough for you? You couldn't win. If, you know, no. Alcohol makes everything worse.
Yeah, you can't win. Can't win.
That sort of stuff doesn't happen much anymore. I did when I finally met Goldie Hawn. It was years later. In fact, it wasn't long ago, maybe 10 years ago in New York. I was at Nobu.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, Goldie, I'm David Keith. Of course you are, David. How are you? I said, I'm constantly getting accused of being your husband without any of the spoils. And she died laughing. And she said, you know, we're all from five tribes, and you and Kurt are from the same tribe.
There it is.
There were only five tribes.
I remember I was at this rooftop pool party my attorney threw after the TED conference in Long Beach a few years ago. And I was just, he asked me to drop in, and he was trying to introduce me to somebody, a producer, and blah, blah, blah. And I was not dressed for the thing whatsoever. So, but I didn't care because I'm Canadian and I'm not that up, you know, stuck up myself. But it was, I stood out, right? And so I just kind of played the schmuck and stayed in the corner. And then as I'm going up the elevator, I'm going up this elevator with this person who's got white pants on and this white sort of fur coat thing and this blonde hair, and door opens up and people are just, ooh, wow, amazing. So I found out later it was Goldie Hawn, and she's just the light bulb you think she is what I'm trying to say. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you didn't recognize her?
I'm dopey that way.
I had a crush on her when she was on Laugh In.
Oh, yeah.
I was in love with her when she was one of the dancers on Laugh In.
Yeah, I was in love with Artie Shaw.
They have fans. So.
Anyway,
I was in the eighth or ninth grade. I was in love with every single one of them: Joanne Worley, Judy Carne, all of them.
Not Lily, though.
I was in love with Ruth Buzzy when she got fixed up.
No. Oh, man, you're right. David Keith, what a treat, man. It's been very cool to talk to you, and I wish you the best.
Thanks, man. Enjoyed it.
Good to chat.
Same to you.
Take care. Bye-bye. David Keith on the Drew Marshall Show.
It's hard to find quality guest speakers these days. If they're interesting, they're usually expensive. And if they're cheap, they're usually boring. Well, here's someone who's both expensive and boring. Drew Marshall is a high school dropout who tried to become a pro football player but didn't make it. He then tried to become a firefighter and didn't make it. Now he's trying to become a stand-up comic. Good luck with that, Mr. Marshall. But if you're looking for someone who's unpredictable, incredibly honest, provocative, genuine, then we've got the right guy. Everyone seems to be an expert on something these days. Why not book someone who's an expert on nothing, except how to be brutally honest about yourself and your faith? To book Drew Marshall as your guest speaker, go to drewmarshall.ca.